happening. Today's scripture is a reading from the gospel according to St. Luke, chapter 23, verses 26 and 44 through 46. As the soldiers led Jesus away, they seized Simon from Cyrene, who was on his way in from the country, and put the cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m, for the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." When he had said this, he breathed his last. It is believed that the Gospel of Luke was not written until at least 40 years after the death of Jesus. Just how did Luke come about his material, especially after so many of the eyewitnesses of these events were no longer living? Why did he write about people like Simon of Cyrene? Could there have been a significance to Simon's part in the crucifixion that we no longer understand today? Luke also wrote the book of Acts, where he mentions Rufus, who was a son of Simon. Could Simon's influence have been greater than we realize? It makes you wonder.
Excuse me, are you Simon?
Who's asking?
Oh, I'm sorry, I am Luke. I'm a physician.
Well, Dr. Luke, I'm not sick.
Oh no, you look well for a man of your age. I'm just seeking a man named Simon.
Simon of Cyrene?
Yes.
No, I'm not him.
Is that a cross?
Why do I feel like you're from the IRS? The Internal Roman Service?
I'm no Roman. I'm not with the IRS. I just typically do not see a cross on a table like this, you know, with a symbol of death. I'm just curious to see...
Okay. Luke?
Yes.
Why don't you have a seat?
Thank you.
And why don't you tell me what brings you to Antioch?
Whew, thank you. I have traveled quite far. I'm from Palestine, Judea, actually. I'm Jewish, and I follow a small group called Christians. We believe in Jesus of Nazareth. I've been commissioned by a great person. His name is Theophilus. He commissioned me because of my skills to take notes and find people that know things. And I have heard that Simon knows things.
What kind of things?
Like the crucifixion, that he came to believe and then came to Antioch and taught others and became a small community here. I was wondering if you knew where I could find him.
You can't. He died some time ago. But I could help you. Simon was a friend. I too am a Christian. I was the first convert to the Christian faith here in Antioch under Simon. He changed my life.
Oh, I would be ever so grateful to hear the story. Now, was Simon there when Jesus was crucified?
Yes. He was He was there, all right. He was most certainly there. He was in Jerusalem on business. His family exported silphium from his hometown of Cyrene in Libya, North Africa. It grows abundantly there. And as you know, it's the wonder herb of the Mediterranean. Did you realize that Julius Caesar used to keep a cachet of silphium in the Roman treasury just in case of financial crisis? His family did quite well. His father, on a trip to Jerusalem one time on business, met his mother. They married. And that is how Simon came to know about Judaism. So years later, when Simon was running the business, he would schedule trips to Jerusalem to be there for the high holy festivals. He loved the atmosphere, going to the temple. He understood the customs. And one year, he scheduled to be there during Passover. He was walking into the city through the sheep's gate, the gate where the lambs would be brought into the city to be sacrificed at the temple. And he couldn't get in because of a crucifixion procession that was taking place for Jesus of Nazareth. I never thought about it before. The gate through which the sacrificial lambs were brought, Jesus walked through to the cross. Well, he's standing by the roadside when the condemned men are passing him, and when Jesus gets beside him, he is carrying his cross and he falls down. He's been beaten so badly, he can't even walk anymore. Well, now there's a problem because they have to have the cross brought to the hill somehow. So the Romans use their rule of conscription. They can compel a person to carry a load up to 1 mile. So who do you think they picked? They're not going to pick a local resident. If a Jewish person touched a cross, he would be defiled. He could not participate in religious activities. You think they would do that at Passover? They'd have a riot on their hands. They're not going to pick one of their own soldiers. The purpose of the whole exercise was humiliation. Humiliate the condemned man. So who did they pick? They picked the black face, the man from Africa, the one for whom no one is going to protest his being chosen. Simon used to say that when he bent down to have the cross put on his back, he felt this rush of anger come over him. Angry that the Romans had such a rule. Angry at a world that was supposedly so advanced, but still treated people like objects. Angry at himself. He said he knew the moment he realized what was going on, he should have been backing up, but he didn't. Angry at this poor fellow being crucified and whatever he did that put him there alongside him. And that's what made him look up for the first time at whoever this person is. And he looked over and Jesus was looking back at him. And Jesus whispered to him, "I will help you." Don't write that part. That was always special to Simon. He never talked openly about that part of the story. Only a few of us know that, but it was an important moment. For one thing, Simon said it broke him out of his anger. When the procession resumed, he said he started chuckling to himself that this fellow's going to help me. He wanted to say, "Friend, you can't even get there on your own. You're the one who needs help." As they walked, he heard women who were following them just mourning and wailing loudly. And Jesus, in front of him, talks to them, but he doesn't turn around. He keeps looking straight ahead and just shouts out, "Daughters of Jerusalem, quit your wailing. Don't weep for me. Weep for yourselves and for your own children. For the day is coming when the lucky ones will be those who never had children at all." can write that down. He used to say that at that moment he was getting quite perplexed about just who this person was and what was going on. When they got to the place of the crucifixion, the soldiers took the beam off of his back and excused him from his service. He stepped back into the crowd, but he thought he had never witnessed a crucifixion before. So he watched. He watched as they took the beam he carried and put it on the ground and laid Jesus on it and strapped his arms to it and then nailed nails into his hands and hoisted the beam up to the post, nailed his feet to the post. He just said it was more gruesome than anything he imagined. But what he said surprised him was all of the religious officials who were there. They were yelling at him. They were shouting, "Save yourself and come down from the cross if you're the anointed of God." And he wondered, what are they even doing here? It's the Passover. The soldiers joined in, he said. It was a game to them anyway. They yelled, "Yes, if you're the king of the Jews, save yourself." And they made a sign stating his crime and put it above his head. "This man is the king of the Jews," meant to humiliate further. He said Jesus hung there. He was in pain and agony, and he just looked at everybody yelling at him and then looked up to heaven and prayed, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." Well, the two others who were crucified were on either side of him. And one of the two joined in with the others who were rebuking him and shouting at him. But his friend on the other side yelled at his other friend and said, "What are you saying? Shut your mouth. We deserve what happened to us. This man hasn't deserved anything like this. He's innocent." And then he called him by name and he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus looked at him and said, "Today you'll be with me in paradise." Paradise. I learned somewhere along the way that paradise is a Persian word. It's a walled garden. And it has to do with a ritual in which the king would invite a guest into his private walled garden where few people had ever gone or seen. And it was the king's way of saying, "When I look at you, I see royalty. Today you'll be with me in paradise." But Simon said, this is where everything started to get eerie. He said the sun began to be covered, not by clouds, by some object moving ever so gradually over the sun. And bit by bit, starting at about midday for several hours, everything grew darker and darker and darker until it was like evening. The crickets started chirping. And then at the moment that the object blotted out the sun, everything grew eerily quiet. People were nervous. You could feel it, but not a sound. And he said that's when he heard Jesus' last two statements. They were both prayers. My God, why have you forsaken me?" Simon knew that that came from Scripture. But right after that, he said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Simon especially recognized that. His mother taught him that as a bedtime prayer when he was a boy. He would learn later on that every Jewish parent would teach that scripture to their children before they go to bed at night, every night as a ritual, so that when you go to sleep, you do so praying that you have given yourself to God's care. You are in God's hands. He will take care of you and watch over you as you sleep. Jesus added to the prayer by saying, Father. He prayed to God like a parent. And then he stopped breathing. Simon said he died committing himself to God's care, and he stood there looking at the slumped body of Jesus on the cross, and he wondered, is this the Messiah? Did I just watch the Messiah be crucified? He said there's a saying that if you participate in a person's death, you share in that person's story. So he had to learn Jesus' story. He met some of his followers. Every time he came to Jerusalem on a trip, he would meet with those followers and be introduced to more followers. It was like he was putting together a puzzle. He learned about the events of Jesus' life, the miracles he performed, the healings that occurred. He even brought people back from the dead. He learned about his teachings, how he could hold crowds of thousands spellbound by his stories, unlike anything they had ever heard a teacher tell before. But all of his stories taught about a God whose mercy knows no limit, that all people matter to God. But the story and the teaching that pulled him over the line of faith was the day someone told him what Jesus said about discipleship. How Jesus said, if you would be my disciple, you must take up your cross and walk behind me. He said when he heard those words, it was like he heard the voice of Jesus and he realized, I did that. That was me. I'm the first disciple. And when he would teach this to people, I can hear his voice now. Think about it. Me, a black African. If I can do it, anyone can do it. And that's when he became a believer. And he gave his life to Christ. Because he believed this, that the hope of our world is in people willing to bear the crosses of others. He would say, if we do not bear others' crosses, we will become okay with a world that puts crosses on people's backs. We will be okay with a world where some bear burdens others don't have to bear. That if we don't bear crosses, we'll get to a place where we don't even see them anymore. And the worst is, we will never realize how we participate in putting crosses on people's backs. He used to tell this story. He learned it as a boy growing up. It goes like this. Every morning in Africa, the gazelle wakes up knowing it must outrun the fastest lion or it will die. And every morning in Africa, the lion wakes up knowing it must outrun the slowest gazelle or it will not eat. So whether you're gazelle or lion, every day you have to run. And then he would say, look around you. Look at everybody. They're all running. Everyone is running because they're afraid. They're afraid of what's going to happen to them. They're afraid of who's after them. They're afraid that they might not have enough to eat or to feed their family. They're afraid that their way of life is being threatened. They're afraid that somebody's going to take what's theirs. But if we will take up their crosses, he would say, they will learn that they no longer have to run, because they're seen, because someone cares. He said, when God looks down on us, God doesn't see nation or empire or possessions. God sees his children, and what God says is, my family. He said, when we take up the crosses of other people, we realize we're all family. We all depend on each other. But then he would say, the best part, yeah, the best part, he would say, is when we take up crosses, that's where we find Jesus. He said, that's where I found Jesus, when I was forced to do something I didn't want to do. He was there. And he helps. He told about a dream he had one time. He dreamed he was walking behind Jesus carrying his cross. Only this time he got to a place where it was too heavy for him. And he said, Lord, I can't go on. The cross is too heavy. I cannot carry it. And the Lord turned around. And he said, come, lay it down here and pick up another. And the Lord showed him all of the crosses people have carried. And he began to look around and he said, they were all so huge, bigger crosses, heavier crosses, some not even made of wood, some of stone, some of iron. And finally, he found this tiny little cross and he picked it up and he said, Lord, I can carry this one. And the Lord started laughing and said, my son, that's the one you laid down. We all need help, he would say, carrying our crosses. And we all bear crosses we cannot carry. We all bear a cross we need help with, because we've all contributed to the crosses of the world, to the pain of other people, pain to the very heart of God. And he said, that's when he realized what happened at Golgotha. He thought for years and years that he carried Jesus' cross. But he realized Jesus bore his. He said, when I watched them take this heavy beam off of my back and put it on the ground and place him upon it and nail his hands to it, and I watched the blood trickle into the wood and him raised upon it, he said, now, years later, I realized what happened that day. He took my burden away and he redeemed me. Years ago, Simon came to Antioch when I was bearing an awful cross. I was bearing something that was destroying me from the inside. And he got to know me, a total stranger. And he told me how to have that cross lifted. He told me about a man who died for me so that I would be free to bear other crosses for him. Luke, when you tell your story, you be sure to tell them that my friend Simon was there.